From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA. So, what do you think of when you hear the term Latin jazz? Salsa? Tito Puente? Cuba? Well, how about fine art or free-form improvisation? Today, Latin jazz is like anything else with Latin in the title. It's all about diversity.
You really are starting to hear a type of music that's based less on specific musical backgrounds and more just kind of on this mix of anything goes. And that's really cool. I think that's a cool place. Mi corazón está triste y solo.
On today's program, the changing face of Latin jazz, with profiles of pianist Michel Camilo, composer Arturo Stable, and rising star Esperanza Spalding. That's coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. Joining us to discuss the news affecting the Latino community is Maria Elena Salinas, national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. Hey, Maria Elena.
Hi, Maria. Nice to talk to you.
Okay, Maria Elena, to start with, we've got a story out of Puerto Rico where apparently military veterans and widows there receive fewer health benefits than their mainland counterparts. This is scandalous. What's the story here?
You're right, it is. And, you know, that is a fact. If a soldier dies in Iraq or Afghanistan or anywhere where there is a military conflict and his family lives in mainland USA, well, regardless of his ethnic background, he is going to receive full health benefits from the government. But if that soldier's family happens to live in Puerto Rico, that's a different story. The widow living in the island would receive less health benefits. And like you said, this also extends to veterans that are living in the island. And the reason is that it's the law. Believe it or not, that's the policy that the Pentagon follows because Puerto Rico is considered to be overseas. So Puerto Rican military families, as well as, you know, representatives or their political representatives have been complaining because, let's face it, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. They fight shoulder to shoulder with Americans whenever they're called to duty. As a matter of fact, Puerto Rico, you know, has a very long history of military service. And too often, Maria, you know, they end up in the front lines in disproportionate numbers. So this really does sound unfair, doesn't it?
Okay, so wait a second. But Alaska and Hawaii are also considered overseas, but they receive full benefits. So what's going on in terms of Puerto Rico?
Well, what's going on, the first thing I think that would come to mind would be discrimination. But, you know, sometimes it's very hard to prove that it's discrimination when you have the Pentagon hiding behind what they call the federal law. So it could be just a technicality. But, you know, until someone actually pays attention to these complaints of Puerto Ricans and they rectify the discrepancy, it's not likely to change. So, you know, I guess in an election year, that would be something good to bring up with both candidates, but especially with Republican candidate John McCain, who is, you know, so supportive of the military and is so forcefully going after the Latino vote.
All right, Maria Elena, another story that you and I know, we are just always using these kinds of polls to confirm what we know from our reporting. This week, Syracuse University is saying that there are unprecedented levels of criminal immigration violation charges being filed by the federal government. So tell us what's the background to this story.
Well, it's part of the increase in the raids that we have reported about so much here in Latino USA. The U.S. government claims to be going after criminals to deport them. And, you know, even though most of those that are detained and deported don't have warrants for their arrest, the report that you mentioned has some really staggering numbers. Immigration prosecutions have jumped 50% from February to March, 73% increase from the year before during that same time. You know, one example given in the Western District of Texas is that prosecutions increased from 626 in January, listen to this, to 3,555 in March. I mean, that's a pretty big jump. And we're talking about things that would be considered just civil offenses. So I guess it would seem that the federal government is trying to detain and deport as many undocumented immigrants before a new administration comes in that could possibly support a comprehensive immigration reform. So who knows? Maybe it has something to do with it.
It's a difficult, long, hot summer, obviously, for many immigrants. All right, Maria Elena, let's talk about this other interesting news, this saying that there is a significant surge in Mexicans who are attaining U.S. citizenship.
Well, I think that there's a surge in citizenship overall, but because there are more Mexican legal residents than from other countries. I know that this report talks about Mexicans specifically. As a matter of fact, last year alone, there were 122,000 Mexicans that became citizens, which is 50% more than the previous year. Now, those numbers are likely to increase. Remember that there are 8 million legal residents that qualify for citizenship and have not yet taken steps to become naturalized. But, you know, you have to think that there's so much going on. It does in part have to do with the very negative tone of the immigration debate, but also has to do with the increase in cost of immigration process. Remember that people tried to apply before all these rates went up. And we also have to give credit to all these massive citizenship campaigns by national Hispanic civic organizations and also by Spanish language media. You know, people are paying more attention and they're realizing that the only way that they're going to be heard is through their vote. So if right now we're seeing an increase in Mexicans in general, an increase in legal residents becoming citizens, that it hopefully will continue to go up once people realize that if they qualify, they have the right to do it. It's a process that is not that complicated.
And we'll see what it looks like in November, María Elena. Talk to you again next week.
Take care.
María Elena Salinas is the national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, we profile three influential jazz musicians helping to redefine music for the 21st century: Arturo Stable, Esperanza Spalding, and our first artist, Michel Camilo. There's something magical about the simplicity and elegance of a jazz trio. Composed of piano, acoustic bass, and drums, the trio is intimate, giving musicians freedom for improvisation and creativity. From Jelly Roll Morton's trio formed in New York City in 1928, to those of Oscar Peterson and Bill Evans, trios have always been the avant-garde of jazz. That remains true to this day, perhaps with no greater trio than that of Dominican-American pianist Michel Camilo. His latest album is Spirit of the Moment, and we're pleased to have Michel Camilo back with us on Latino USA. Welcome back, Michel.
Thank you, Maria.
Good to see you.
Great to be here.
You've been busy.
Oh, yes. You bet.
Really
all over
busy.
The world.
You know, I still find it fascinating, but I guess this is what the life of an artist means, that after all of these decades, three decades. Two decades of playing jazz.
From New York. I mean,
in
one
New
decade
York.
Into the Caribbean.
In the Caribbean. So three decades of a career in
yes.
jazz that you can still find inspiration and new levels of music. But this album, I've been listening to it nonstop, and it's just, like, so soothing to me.
It's an album that I wanted to do a long time ago. It's my coming back to the trio, first of all, after 3 years between the Live at the Blue Note album, which won a Grammy for Best Latin Jazz Album, and then I did three different projects in between. But then I missed the trio. And then, like you said, the trio for me is like my private mini orchestra.
But let me ask you, when you say that you miss the trio, what does the trio represent for you as a jazz pianist?
It challenges me because it's not just about me, it's about my sidemen as well. Both of them are Cuban-born, Daphne Prieto on drums and Charles Flores on bass. It's a three-way dialogue all the time There is something we don't have to talk about. It's something that you feel or you don't. And out of that feeling comes that interplay, which is what makes jazz so great. And it takes a lot of playing together to know and trust each other. So we can react in a nanosecond, literally, to what everybody's playing or who's bringing you somewhere else. So that's why it's always so different, and that's why we enjoy each performance as a new one.
There's something that you did with this album. I found this fascinating, your whole fascination with the number 3.
Oh, yes.
And in fact, this CD, Spirit of the Moment, is divided into 3 distinct chapters.
That's right.
Those chapters are what?
It's, I would say, body, mind, and soul. That's the way I conceived the whole album. The first part is all original songs. The second, the middle one, is 3 jazz standards and 1 original. And then the last part is a little bit more abstract because it's a spirit. And it's 3 originals and 1 standard.
Let's talk about those standards. You have this beautiful interpretation of Miles Davis, Bill Evans' tune that's called Nardis. How did you approach this song written by 2 giants of jazz who clearly have impacted your own style and sound?
Well, the songs that are in this album, the 4 jazz standards, are all by my idols, so to speak. Each one has a very personal treatment. Nardis, the inspiration for this arrangement came using the rhythm of what is called in flamenco music, bulería, which is one of the toughest beats in flamenco, and it's one of the biggest challenges you can ever possibly play.
Can you clap it out, that beat?
It's all based on a 10 count in Spanish. It's basically a 3-4 beat, but they don't count it like that. They don't feel it like that. They feel it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I mean, that's a slow beat, but it goes really fast. It goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Wow!
That's how it goes.
Let's talk about the ending chapter and a song, again, by another jazz great, Miles Davis, the song Solar.
Yeah.
What is the last chapter, and what did you want to do with this Miles Davis song, Solar?
Well, the whole idea, basically, was to play a song but not to play it. You know, to deconstruct it completely into cells. So take the elements of the song, the harmonies, the rhythmic treatments, because it's 3 different rhythm treatments within very short time. And then at the same time, just hint the melody of the song, but never really play it. And that was the challenge right there. I call it collective improvisation. Let's create on the spot a chart, and that's it. That's how we live it, really ethereal. And then, you know, just follow me, I follow you, you follow me. Just listen to each other, and let's kick some ideas around.
Oh, I love this. I wish I was a jazz artist and I could just kind of live in that moment.
That's it.
Congratulations, Michel.
Thanks.
May you keep on writing, producing, feeling for many, many, many years to come.
I love life. Life is too short. We have to have fun where we can. I love it. Life is beautiful.
And if everybody could just see the big smile on Michel Camilo's face, you would know he really does love life. Thank you for joining us on Latino USA.
My pleasure. Thank you, Maria.
Michel Camilo's latest album is Spirit of the Moment, released by Telarc Records. He's also got another CD, Michel Camilo and Tomatito, Spain Again. Thanks again, Michel.
My pleasure.
Art, the ability to create something to stimulate our senses, in many ways ties us together as a people. Art comes in many forms: painting, culinary, architecture, and of course, music. each form is designed to stimulate a specific sense. And while it may not seem like you can stimulate your auditory senses with a painting, at least one musician would disagree. Arturo Stable is a Cuban master percussionist and composer who's created a work of what he calls audible art, inspired by his favorite paintings. It's his newest CD, Notes on a Canvas, and Arturo joins us now on Latino USA. Welcome to the program, Arturo.
Hi, Maria. Thanks for having me here.
What made you say, okay, I'm going to do this? You know, here are my favorite paintings, and let's go with this idea.
Well, it's an idea that has been with me for many, many years because my dad is a painter and sculptor as well as a musician. So I grew up surrounded by that. And since I was a little kid, I always thought that maybe someday I will do something that will mix all those disciplines. And when I got to New York a couple of years ago, I just decided that was the right moment to go ahead and try that project. And here we are.
So the first cut is called La Jungla, The Jungle. It's a painting by Wilfredo Lam. You know, what I love is that there will probably be people who hear this who will now go and Google Wilfredo Lam and then actually see his paintings. You actually, in the CD, you've got the painting that inspired each song. This is, the album starts out in a pretty, I would say, traditional jazz kind of feeling. Am I right?
Yes.
What is it that you see in this painting, The Jungla, and how did you make it into music?
Lam makes a lot of Afro-Cuban elements into the cubism, and I got attracted by that, and I wanted to do a tune that it was going to be rhythmically powerful and that will reflect somehow part of the Afro-Cuban traditions that I grew up with.
So then you move on to one of my all-time favorite artists, Frida Kahlo. You're basically focusing on one of her self-portraits. It's one of the portraits when she was younger and beautiful and even sexy. This is one when she actually was feeling very sexy about herself. But what I loved in your music was that you brought in the marimba. It was Mexico and the joy, and yet also, you know, the kind of questioning that Frida lived with. It came through with this music.
When I was doing the research to choose one of her paintings, I found this painting that I actually didn't know, and I thought it was a very, very special painting because of that reason, because she was so young that still all the suffering and all the hazards of the life that she was still to live didn't have something happen at that time. So it's very fresh, it's sexy, it's intimate. And actually, the last thing that we did, almost last minute, was deciding to add Esperanza's voice, doubling the melody in the marimba. And I think that came out great, give the feminine touch very well.
Well, thank you for continually being inspired, Arturo. It's really been fun, and I have the CD on all the time in my office. Thanks so much for making it.
Thanks so much. That's the best compliments I can get.
Arturo Stable's new album, Notes on a Canvas, is available from Origen Records. In a minute, bassist, vocalist, and composer Esperanza Spalding, coming up on Latino USA, No Se Vayan.
You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
Jazz great and bassist Milt Hinton often said that the bass is the atlas of jazz, carrying all other instruments on his shoulders. That can definitely be said of rising star Esperanza Spalding, who uses her prolific skills as a bassist and now a vocalist to lift her band to new musical heights.
The way you look at me when you think I'm not looking tells me your heart's a sleeping giant born by someone you loved before me. I see you're scared, unconvinced by what I've tried to say.
Esperanza Spalding has anchored the bands of such greats as Pat Metheny, Herbie Hancock, and one of my closest friends, pianist Michelle Camilo. And the 23-year-old is also the youngest faculty member ever to teach at the Berklee College of Music. She has a new album out now, simply titled Esperanza. And we're pleased to have Esperanza join us on Latino USA. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So you are a bassist and a vocalist and a composer. You're 23 years old.
That's right.
You grew up in Portland, Oregon, which is not exactly the center of, you know, jazz.
Right.
I mean, there's good music out there, but it's not kind of seen as the place. So how'd you end up producing your own CD and with this very unique jazz style?
It's funny. There's a weird kind of juxtaposition in Portland between the fact that there's real no venues and there's no infrastructure to support, like, live jazz. But then there's also this other side where there's so many phenomenal musicians of all different walks, of all different genres and idioms. Anything that you pretty much could ask for is somewhere there. And because I think there's not a lot of work, there's just this type of community and mentorship and camaraderie that I've never really found anywhere else. So as I ventured into the world of the bass and the world of jazz, they were just right there kind of leading me along this journey.
Did you always know, you know, when you were a young girl, I'm going to be a singer? And then when you got older, you said, and I'm going to be a jazz singer.
Not really. No. Singing is such art, you know. Many people claim to be singers. I'm one of them, and I don't really think I am. I mean, it takes years to really master the art of emoting and drawing people in, you know.
Yeah, but when you're 23 and you've been able to kind of develop your own sound. I mean, like, for example, in I Adore You, which has got that really, you know, you've tapped into the Brazilian thing, but it's not, like, too overwhelming. It doesn't feel like it's, like, all, I mean, it's clearly a Brazilian, a north-south mix.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, for sure. Part of the reason that, I mean, I feel very free. Like, when I'm doing music, when I'm writing or rehearsing or playing, I don't feel like I'm supposed to sound like any idiom. And maybe part of that freedom comes from not seeing myself as a singer, per se. So, I mean, kind of, I can do whatever I want, you know? It's like, that sounds so funny. But I feel like that.
At such a young age, you had some hard times when you were growing up in Portland, Oregon, and you talk a lot about your mom. One of the many things that she did was she worked as a labor organizer. Tell us a little bit about that, and of course, everyone wants to know, Your name, it's a gorgeous name. People who speak Spanish know it immediately what it means. But if you speak English, you don't know what Esperanza means. So what does Esperanza mean?
Esperanza means hope. That's what the name means. My mother lived for many years in Mexico and spent a lot of time. She taught in Mexican schools, and she worked with movements of Cesar Chavez organizing the farm workers unions in California. So she spent a lot of time around Hispanic culture, and she speaks Spanish. And before I was born, she decided that she wanted to name me Hope. It's like that's what she had envisioned for me, that I would bring her hope and that I would bring hope to, I guess, people. I don't know. All the sorrows will consume me, to peace among men I never can see. But I'm not sure enough to give it up. I'll keep faith like so many souls who are.
Well, you do. You definitely, I mean, just the way you look, you've got a real sense of, you know, a kind of the racial balance of the future. I mean, you're I think African-American. I mean, what is your racial balance?
Yeah, that's a complicated one. Isn't that amazing? That
I mean, you don't have to answer it, but the thing is that
I'm
it just feels like with all of your music and kind of the look that you have, it's very kind of retro, because it's definitely,
right.
You know, you've got an Afro, but then it's really all about the future.
My father was African-American. And my mother is Welsh, Native American, Hispanic, and she has a little bit of African American too. The music is kind of an analogy for what happens with people of mixed descent, and that you can't depend as much on your ancestry for your identity. You know, like many people are realizing that one like lineage of music isn't really enough for them to express who they are. So you really are starting to hear a type of music that's based less on specific backgrounds, at least musical backgrounds, and more just kind of on this mix of anything goes. And that's really cool. I think that's a cool place. And I like that you identified that. It is a good place to be going towards the future, for sure.
Thank you so much, Esperanza.
Thank you.
Good luck with all your music.
Thank you very much.
Esperanza Spalding's self-titled release is available from Heads Up International. And for this week, this has been Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Thanks for listening. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world, at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.